podcast is being recorded on unceded Anishinaabe, Algonquin territory. This podcast is also rated R and F. The F is for Fuck Whitey. Fuck Whitey as a staff, record label, and as a motherfucking crew. And if you want to be done with Whitey, then fuck you too. Welcome, bienvenue à un autre épisode of Shut Up Podcast. I am your host, B Black, aka Mr. ShutUpPodcast.com, aka the Canadian Controversial Negro, aka Le Grand Papa B, aka Gaston Lucien, Big Daddy Labrador. All right, today's date is August 16, 2026, and we made it to episode 361, and where today I'll be talking about FYAYCAJ. That's, I'll explain what that means, because I just realized that I failed to do it on the last episode, and I will continue off from the previous topic. If you heard the Christianity, man, my response to this is all a response to watching that New Ager versus 20 Christians, quote unquote, discussion. So yeah, I'm just gonna continue from where I left off. But before we do any of that, let's start with some quotables and some randomness. All right, so for now, actually no quotables for now for this today's episode. So we'll just jump into randomness.
So you're a philosopher?
Yes.
It's just an excuse to play that clip. All right, so first item is today's my first Sunday without any episode of House of the Dragon. The season finale was last Sunday, and today I don't know what to do with myself except record a podcast and edit it. And I'm kidding. Anyway, I enjoyed the season finale, but I enjoyed even more the recap by the Black Guy Who Tips podcast. They they were in their element in this particular episode for this recap. I really enjoyed it. I'm tempted to write them an email talking about, I hate listening to your podcast, but that's the subject line, and then the rest is in public, out in public. I had my headphones on while listening to the recap, and I don't laugh out loud. I repress laughter, but I imagine I have a goofy smile on, and I'm trying to convince people I'm a thug, and listening to their podcast ain't helping, but I'm in public. But that's a different discussion. Anyway, so check out their recap. It's worth it if you've been watching House of the Dragon. Don't listen to the haters or the book readers who are pissed off that he went a different route. It's, yeah, I'm in it for the recaps.
So you're a philosopher?
Yes.
Because we always talk about love yourself. But I don't think a lot of people like themselves. And that there's a difference. You can love yourself, but then you sit down and you're like, eesh, I don't really like me. But also coming to a point where I can look in the mirror and say, I actually like me. Like, dang, like, this is why I would put a selfie on. Because I'm like, I look at myself and I'm like, wow, I look so good. Let me post this. And so because of that, again, because of where it's flowing from, if it's flowing from my relationship with God and understanding who He is, understanding who He's created me to be, then what can people say? There's nothing you can tell me.
Right.
Yeah, so that is the healing journey.
That is the healing journey. The voice you just heard is, she's a Zambian lawyer. Her name is Naomi Pilula. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. And she caught my attention this week, a post on Black People Reddit. And I'll just read the caption. I was inspired. I was inspired by her words. And essentially she goes, Zambian lawyer Naomi Pilula Never expected a simple Happy Monday selfie she posted in June 2025 to go viral. Instead, the photo was flooded with negative comments from strangers criticizing her appearance, particularly her nose. The post eventually amassed more than 530,000 comments and shares. Damn. Pelula admitted that she considered deleting the photo, but ultimately decided to leave it up. Speaking to People, she said, People the magazine, she said she had learned to accept herself and refused to allow strangers online to take that confidence away from her. I'm not an aesthetically beautiful person. And that's okay. She said, adding that she loves herself and can be herself. What began as online bullying ultimately amplified her message of self-acceptance and confidence. That's amazing. Holla at that. Shout out to that sister. To me, it's a big deal what she did, because I still struggle with the concept of self-acceptance and confidence. I grew up with the notion that only the arrogant, the prideful, like they say in the Bible, the prideful accept themselves or have confidence or love themselves. It's a sign of pride, and this is coming from, like, even in the family, it was a concept that was. We struggled with. Needless to say, it just opened us up. It opened me up for manipulation. Because in my mind, the notion is love came from everyone else. You had to live up to everyone else's standard. Granted, I had to be an adult to realize that, oh, wow, that's bullshit. That's not going to work. The concept of self-acceptance is still foreign to me. And I'm still working with it. So just hearing her, Faced with all the haters, and she was tempted to delete the post, and she said, "Nah, fuck it, I'm gonna keep it up there." I'm inspired. I'm just inspired. I'm like, if she could do it, I could do it. Kind of type of thing like that. I don't know if she was born that way, or maybe her family just had a great understanding of it. But look, man, it's just I'm applauding here and. This is like my week's inspiration. It's funny I say this, but you know, it's put it into practice. That's the hard part. Anyway, so shout out to her and middle fingers to the haters. You know, there's people out there. It's an unfortunate portion of humanity who can only feel good inside. I don't know if they feel good about themselves, but they only feel good. The only time something good feels inside is when they've caused suffering to someone else.
So, you're a philosopher?
Yes.
Last but not least, I am going to summarize all the... Okay, so three things. The first one is, I finished book 4 of Dungeon Crawler Carl. Great book! I mean, I enjoyed it, especially the epilogue is where it was at. I'm not going to spoil it, don't worry about it. I just want to summarize that I finished the fourth book. Oh, hell yeah, I'm buying the fifth book. Yesterday, I watched Juice, with I was high when I watched it, and I felt Pac's performance, especially the big man. If you want respect, you gotta earn. You damn right. Anyways, I'm the whole movie, I'm like, oh, this nigga was crazy. Pac was acting his ass off. And last but not least is, I just got home from watching the movie The Odyssey by Christopher Nolan. I was curious to see what the hype was all about. I wrote down, I said, I'm going to see an historical, inaccurate, DEI woke movie on the Sabbath. That's the message I sent to my friend. Look, I went there One, because I wanted to piss off white people. The white people were like, what the fuck? What do you mean you got a black woman playing Helen of Troy? Or whatever the fuck they were pissed off at. And at the same time, I wanted to see why everyone was saying it was a great movie. And I got to tell you, in my own opinion, if you ask me,
great fucking movie.
Great fucking movie. Great fucking movie. Amen. So, yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. Probably the biggest thought that I have about it is how, in the previous episode, I talked about how I've reached an age where sometimes it's hard for me to enjoy a movie. I feel like everything is all the same. Look, when it comes to a story, I feel like I've heard it all. You know, you got the good guy, you got the main character has something happen to them, and then 9 times out of 10 ends with a happy ending. Type of, you know what I mean? It's like, but at this particular movie, it's like, yeah, I mean, we're gonna take this old Greek ass story and tell it to you, but I guess what I'm saying is they managed to take an old story and presentable for this day and age, and still entertaining, engaging for this day and age. The fact that it was multicultural, because usually when you make a Greek movie, you're expecting to see white people. Nah, Christopher Nolan, I'm gonna give him credit, man. That dude knows how to do some storytelling. I guess what I'm saying is, when I first watched the movie, I was thinking about, hey, what do you mean you got an Asian character in there? You got a South Asian character. You notice what's with all these non-white people in the movie? That was your first thought. But then you just blend in the movie, and it's just genuine storytelling. And I like when you get to the end and you're like, yeah. I mean, I don't know if there's no, I'm not going to spoil it or anything, but I guess it's a classic story. You can read up. I think for me, the part that was original is it's a story about a soldier trying to coming home. Excuse me. I'm laughing at myself because I'm like, what the fuck is an Odyssey? I'm like, oh, an Odyssey, it's a story. Whatever. But it was, so homeboy, it's about not just a soldier, but a king coming home from a war, and he's got an Odyssey, and shit happens, and it was just fascinating. Now, I did say that at the beginning, yeah, my first thought was, what's with all these non-white people in the story? And that's, I'm not justified saying that. It's, I just realized that there's a white guy in my head. There's an angry white guy in my head. I think it's all from all the years of empathizing with shitty white people. And it's to a point where I'm always predicting what they're going to say, what they're going to bitch about, whatever. So in my head, it's like there was a part of my head that was like, oh, they're going to bitch about this, they're going to complain about that. And that's what made this movie so great, is because that part of my head silenced itself. So yeah, man, so all the people who complain about the casting, all they did is promote the movie. Because honestly, one of my motivators was, oh, you don't like the movie? Okay, guess I got to go watch it. Just to piss you off. And you know what? You guys can have that movie that's coming out with Jonathan Major, where he plays that Zionist-funded movie that he's part of. Yeah, you white folks can have that movie. But that Christopher Nolan movie, yeah, man, great storytelling. So, yeah, I am telling you, if you're looking for a good movie to go watch, I recommend it.
So, you're a philosopher?
Yes.
All right. Last thought is, this one is just brief. Last thought is, just keep it simple, is just to give you a hint of what FYAYCAJ. Just to go on the, look, before we get to that, I'm just going to leave you with the thought that it's a post that came up on Thread, and I'm going to share it with you. And it goes, here to remind you that the Ku Klux Klan is a Christian organization.
You must learn.
And that's it for Quotable and Randomness. Now let's jump to Final Say. But before I do that, I'm going to take a quick break.
Go.
Oh. All right, final say. Final thought, final say. You know, I'm tempted. I keep forgetting. It's my goddamn podcast. I think I'm going to call this the last word because featured thought, maybe just the last word might be appropriate. But it's the last word. It's the last part of the podcast, and I put a lot of thought into it. So I'm going to start with a Bible verse. Just to give some context, and it goes, all right, a reminder, this is a continuation of the previous episode where I react, where I shared my thoughts on, the discussion titled, One New Ager, her name is Jasmine Garden, or her online name is Jasmine Garden versus 20 Christians, and it was a quote-unquote discussion. And I'm going to start with John 14, 15. If you love me, keep my commands. Hold on to that thought. I really want you to, if you love me, hold on to my command. Not if you love me, you won't cheat on me. No, keep my commands. Hold on to that thought. Now, I'm realizing that at the last episode, I said I used the acronym FYAYCAJ. I may have just said FYAYCJ. Same thing, but it's an acronym created actually for the show, and it's my response to any time some crazy Christian wants to say unsolicited or didn't ask their opinion, but they want to say shit like Jesus loves you, and my response is FYAYCAJ, FYAYCAJ. I think I'm gonna make a beat to it. It flows well with the theme, and it stands for fuck you and your cracker-ass Jesus. Jesus loves you. Fuck you and your cracker-ass Jesus. And so, like I said, last episode was focused on my reaction to the discussion. Now I'm going to focus on why I had so... I'm going to focus on my hatred for Christianity. I'm not pulling back on that. I think on the last one, because I'm talking to a public, I was like, I don't know if I made it clear, but I loathe Christianity. Maybe that's a journey into therapy, into getting away from that hate. But this time around, I hate Christianity. And this next segment is, or what I'm going to talk about is why I hate it and what made me leave the church. I'm combining those two questions together. Why I hate it and what made me leave the church. And I'm breaking this down into three parts. It wasn't just one thing. The relationship started where the relationship started to break down, and the final straw and what happened afterward. Okay, three categories. So the first one, to the question, what made you leave the church? It just wasn't one thing. I'm going to use the metaphor of a divorce. When I think about my relationship with Christianity, and this thought came to me after a therapy session, I would compare it to a divorce. Because I was really into, at least I believed that I was really into the religion of my parents, or the religion of my ancestors and slavers. I was really into Christianity, and this is for all these Christians who look at former Christian as, I shouldn't give a fuck about them, but it's a lot of Christians have difficulty accepting former Christians. To them, it's like, yo, it's like the mob. There's no retirement. You don't leave. And they will say that, oh, I guess you were never a Christian. And I'm saying, oh, no. There was a time I was Christian. I was into, like, I understand why some people are still choose to have a relationship with Jesus. I do understand. I know it can work, but for me, just like marriage can work, but for me, when I think of my relationship, which I had it's a divorce. Yeah, that's forbidden. This is my moment to say, I'm still remembering how it wasn't all bad. My dad, God bless him, he, the pastor, I remember there was a time he was just straight with me. He was just, and probably this is probably the realest, the most authentic shit he's ever said to me. And he said, look, he was sympathizing. He goes, look, even if you don't believe in it, even if you don't believe in the miracles, the stories and whatever, show up for the community. I used to work in the United States. When I moved to the States, it was California. And he encouraged me. He said, yo, when you get there, find yourself a church. And it was his way of saying, find yourself a community. And it was right. I remember going to the States, finding a church. And there was a certain familiarity. Granted, all the hymns were in English. Whiter than snow. We're like, oh, plus blanc que neige. Whatever. It was interesting hearing them sing hymns that I grew up with, but spoken in French. So yeah, I still appreciated the community, the culture, and like Common in one of his songs, I forget the name of the song, but he goes, basically religion is that thing, how he doesn't diss other people's religion because it's that thing that keeps them on the narrow and straight path. It's a thing they go to keep them strong, to face the madness. It's the thing that they could go to. So I understood all that. So it's my way of saying, that's why I compare my separation from church to a divorce. Because it wasn't all bad. Now, here's where shit started to break down. When I think of the question, what made you leave the church? My first answer is, it wasn't just one thing. But the one thing I do remember, what planted the seed, was the moment I was a child. I was a teenager going through his black awakening, realizing that, oh shit, I got black skin. Oh shit, these white people, why they keep calling me nigger? Because my black, like I was, maybe I should add that how I went to school with a whole bunch of white people, white teachers and whatever. And of course, none of them, including my parents, my parents, because they prioritized religion over culture. And so no one was around to teach me shit like, you're beautiful black skin. Now, I was surrounded by people saying, yo, we don't see race. There's no such thing as race. Racism is that thing. Black people keep bringing up to make white people feel bad about themselves. So I was coming into myself, and I used the word black awakening. And as I'm awakening, I remember going to some seminar, and I learned how that portrait of Jesus that my parents had hanging in the kitchen, the Final Supper. It's actually the Final Supper of all these, was it 12 apostles? All these white dudes up there was inaccurate. Jesus was never white. It blew my mind. I like the idea that he wasn't white. Like, blew my mind that he wasn't white. And it's not the fact that he wasn't white that I could have lived with that. It's okay, whatever. He got creative with the color. It's why he was portrayed as a white person. And it's the idea that, hold on a second, how does this almighty creator allow racism to fuck up his word, his text, or his appearance? I can't say goddamn, but this white boy can draw him as a white person to oppress, to make people like me feel less than. To make it feel like, If God were to come back, you'd be in the nosebleed while all these white people would be front and center. Because of my white skin, I don't have what it takes to get close to the Almighty. Sure, the teachers try to act like Jesus was like a white savior. Like, he would say no to racism. He wouldn't say no to slavery or Jim Crow or shit like that. But if some white dude would call you nigger, he would tell you to, hey, turn the other cheek. But that planted a seed of what the fuck is up with this religion. But I still held on. I think this is where I still held on to the religion, at the very least, the community aspect of it. It wasn't easy. This is the, when I think of a married couple, that thing that causes you to be like, you put up with only because you're in a relationship with this person. Like you've convinced you. The thing that makes you say that, oh, relationships aren't easy. Well, for me, my relationship with Christianity was difficult as I was embracing my identity as a black person. I had difficulty reconciling my black and Christian identities together. But I stuck to it because, you know, it's part of the relationship. It's part of the challenge. And here's the thing. I know there are black churches out there, especially in the States. There are black churches I could have joined, and not just black church. In my dad's church, at the beginning, they weren't into black history or bringing up the fact that you were black. Now, they were black on time. But I know in the States, in the United States, there are denominations that are like African-centric, black-centric. Like there are churches, there are people I could have talked to, and I could have talked about my challenges to reconciling my identity, and they would have been able to help me out. So I guess what I'm saying is it was a challenge to reconcile the difference, but it just made the connection a little challenging. So black awakening, discovering Jesus wasn't white. And here's the funny part. what added to the layers of what led to the downfall of Christianity on the list, when I go through the list, another one, which is kind of interesting, reading the actual Bible. Reading the Bible actually did a lot of damages. There was a time where I was really into Christianity and I would take bits and pieces, like the inspiring shit of the Bible, like the one about, hey, stop worrying. If God takes care of the these birds, why the fuck would he take care of you? Shit like that. I used to find it inspiring. But then I actually tried reading it from starting from Genesis. And the goal was to go to end to read the whole thing. And as I went through Genesis, the more I read this shit, the more I'm like, this feels less like God wrote this shit. This feels less like a God wrote this shit. This feels more like human beings wrote this shit with the intention of convincing you that God wrote it. It's like, hey, look, man, after I beat the shit out of you, you're going to need to believe that God wrote it, which is a persuasive argument, you know, like, I couldn't. Let me put it this way. I felt like what was written, you would need to kick my ass. You would need to beat the shit out of me, deprive me of food, make me suffer, and say, hey, I'm going to stop your suffering once you accept that God wrote it. I'll be like, fuck yeah, what the fuck, whatever you want to hear. But I wasn't inspired. Again, it didn't feel like God wrote it, and I started to question the people, the authors, the writers. I'm like, I don't think you were sent by God. I think you were just a human being. But yeah, reading the Bible added to the list of reasons that caused the breakdown. And then the final straw. My final straw. Reading the Bible also made me see how I can see how a scoundrel, a con artist, it felt like a toolkit for con artists. The Bible felt less like an inspiring to a resource to gain strength from, and more like a tool for con artists to con people. It felt more like that, and it also felt a lot more like the product of the religion of my enslavers. The idea of religion of my enslaver is I got this from the poet Talon Acey. he was, I can't remember where I read this, but he was talking about a story of where, it might have been a post or something, but he was talking about a story of someone talking about, explaining to him, or he heard someone say shit like, oh, if it wasn't for slavery, we would have never had a relationship with Jesus. Think about that. If it wasn't for slavery, we would have never had a relationship with Jesus. Like, how come white people didn't need slavery to come to Jesus? Do you know what I mean? Anyway, so he read that and his thought was, oh shit, I'm about to, that's where I discovered that his thought was, oh fuck. I forget the actual wording, but it ends with the religion of our savage, barbaric enslavers. I forget how he keep it, but it's where I got the idea of, I started thinking of Christianity being less of a religion or less of a relationship, less of something divine and more of the religion of our enslavers, of our enslavers, with the people enslaved by ancestors, my ancestors. This is why, but just a quick note, I'm thinking about this, of the influence of white people, how white people gave us Christianity. And I'm thinking about during that discussion, New Age Jasmine versus those 20 Christians. It really bothered me when the white Christians spoke up. Because it felt so much of, how dare you speak up? This is what we get for letting you Negroes read. How dare you speak against our religion? Get in line, right? Like, it felt more like, it felt less like a discussion, like their input. It felt more like, get in line, nigger. It's gonna be a while before I let some white person talk me into spirituality, especially out of all religion, Christianity. Oh shit, you don't want to be white and talk to me about Jesus. You're just gonna make it worse. Finally, the final straw. And what happened? The final straw of what finally said, okay, I'm done. Let's file the divorce paper. I'm filling it out. I'm done. What's the, I'm thinking of, love don't live here no more. Love don't live here no more. It was the support. This was 2020. The support evangelical Christians were showing Trump. And I kept thinking about how all the shit I get for doing things like listening to rap music, not showing up to church, not praising the way someone else does. Like, all the time I was criticized for not being Christian enough. And I was looking at, what about, I'm taking all this shit and look at Trump. He gets to present himself like a Bible reader. You know, I wish I could get this. Like he's actually, like, I wasn't seeing enough Christians being like, hey, yo, he doesn't represent, fuck that guy. I wasn't seeing enough. You know how after 9/11, Muslims were like, yo, they don't represent Islam. Oh, fuck that. No, they're not at all. Religion, it's about peace. I get it now. I understand that. But I was not seeing enough Christians being like, yo, that motherfucker, like, holding him accountable. It's as if Christianity doesn't have that mechanism. No, I'm the one going to hell because, I don't know, I won't stop touching myself. But this motherfucker, he's like, oh, he just needs to be forgiven. But just to make it more personal, I think this is where it really connected, is 2020. For a lot of us, it was a bad year. I was going through some dark times. I won't go into it, but I do remember, it's like I was not in a mood to, like, argue with people anymore. It's like, fuck it, I'm done. I'm not changing in mind. But I remember coming back from work, waiting for my bus, and I crossed path with this woman who used to teach me Sunday school. used to teach me Sunday school and as a teenager used to won't shut in the fuck, used to nag the fuck out of me about, like, oh, well, right. Just like one of those Christians, it's like, you're not Christian enough. Like, always had a criticism that was just driving me nuts. And the worst is, I was trying to get her to understand that, hey, maybe I'm not doing what you think I should be doing, but this is why. But she wasn't trying to hear it. It was like talking to a white person about race. It was as bad. But I remember having one of those conversations with her, and it, like I just remembered her as the Christian nag. Like, she won't nag me. She'll nag the fuck out of me for whatever, man. Anyway, so I met her, and she gives me a flyer for something going on at her church, and I'm noticing guest speaker is Paula White. And I remember my brain going, why do I know that name? And then, ding, wait a minute. Ain't that Trump's spiritual advisor? I remember, it's, as I'm thinking it and it comes out of my mouth, wait, isn't that Trump's spiritual advisor? I'm laughing because this chick looks me in the eye and I can feel it. She's about to fucking lecture me. She already started. She was saying shit like, oh, well, you shouldn't let the media influence your thought about him. As soon as she said that, I was like, bitch. I didn't call her a bitch, but in my mind, I was like, bitch. I ain't trying to hear it. In my mind, I was like, I am done. Because I saw she was getting ready to use the same tactic she used to use to make me feel like I wasn't Christian enough. And now she's about to use the same shit to lecture me to attend a fucking conference by this bitch, Paula White. Are you out your fucking mind? You can't tell. She couldn't tell, but I was like, but I remember being like, oh, thank God my bus. And maybe this is like probably like Providence, but I remember my bus showing up and I was like, my bus, like, there was no embarrassment, there was no guilt. I'm like, oh, I went from, pretty much, I pretty much said, I ain't trying to hear this shit. I said, my bus is here, I'm out. Thank God, I'm surprised she didn't ask for my, she must have known she was wrong. But anyway, my bus showed, and I just got on, and I remember just like, phew. The jig was up. The jig was up.
You cannot trick me.
You, that's exactly how I felt. You cannot trick. I was done, man. Everything was like, it was just interesting how the Bible, the lady who used to teach me Sunday school, were like, I'm done. It is kind of interesting how it came to those two. I mean, black. I could have survived, but reading the Bible and the chick who used to teach me. No, don't get me wrong. There was a lot of many Christians, but it just if I retell this story and make a movie out of it, and Christopher Nolan directed, I'm gonna say, and then he loses his relationship with Jesus. But these two, I would put a lot of emphasis in those two characters, the Bible and those two characters. So I'm done with the religion. You know what also helped? I think I think about how when I shout out to COVID. I mean, I'm sorry if you lost someone to COVID. But lockdown was a blessing in disguise. I loved at first having a reason to not go to church. But it kind of helped not having a reason. I mean, having a reason to not go to church. No. It was less the guilt the Christian family would use to get me to go to church was gone. Like, guilt was no longer a tool they could use to recruit me. Because they knew they were losing me, so they were using guilt. It's like, oh, help there. It's your dad's church. How are you not going to help out? But at that point, I was like, fuck it. Fuck it. I'll rather burn in hell than let you try to trick me with this bullshit, with this white man's religion. What's interesting is I added a note about therapy. Therapy, when I got into therapy, it put me on this journey into self-acceptance, into being who I want to be. But it also added, this is what an interesting part is, I'm looking at the top, is how therapy helped me find the words, gave me the language to help me understand shit like toxic Christianity and love versus control. And okay. So toxic Christianity is because I remember in therapy. So therapy puts me on a journey into being a more authentic version of myself. Fuck it. I'm living for me now. Fuck the world. And I remember how my therapist nearly lost her job because she was, the way she was talking about Christianity, it felt like, oh, well, you're trying to bring me back into it. But I'm realizing, no, she was two things. Is one, getting me to recognize toxic Christianity is a thing. It wasn't, oh, no, you just suffered from toxic Christianity, so just go back and just avoid toxic. No, she wasn't saying that, but she was identifying how toxic Christianity is a thing. It's also my way of saying that I can understand the people who are still in the church because maybe they didn't have to put up with toxic Christianity. I've dealt enough with it to be like, yeah, I'm done. To be finalize the divorce. It also helped me. Actually, it's something. Okay. I've always known that I struggled with the concept of love versus control, but I'm realizing how Christianity played a role in me not being able to tell the difference. I honestly can't tell when someone is being loving or controlling. The two feel like the same. I can't tell if I'm being loving or I'm being controlling. But I do know, this is why I started out with that verse of John 14:15. If you love me, keep my commandments. The Christianity I grew up with put a lot of emphasis on obeying. Obey. Obeying and seeking forgiveness. That's actually, it actually blew my mind hearing Boardwalk Empire, the main character saying, I am not seeking forgiveness. I'm like, I didn't know you were allowed to do that. Yeah, toxic Christianity, love and control. And now that I've left the church or I'm no longer fall for the rules or binded by the rules of Christianity, there's a certain life feels more enjoyable. That's what I'm trying to say. It feels more enjoyable in the church. Life felt challenging, but it felt like, because God is constantly testing me. That's part of the journey. That was the purpose. Of course, life is shitty, but that's just God testing me. So when I get to heaven and be like, oh, I'm good up. You put up with all my shit. Come to the front, just right behind the white people, though. I wonder if heaven's got a ghetto. It probably does. I think heaven is segregated. White man's religion. Right. So I found a newfound peace and freedom. And that freedom is the reason why I can't go back. When I think about, this is what the thing is. For all you Christians out there, when you're trying to convert someone into Christianity, what they don't notice is the fact that I was able to live my life as a Christian, not believe in Jesus, and I was surrounded by people going, oh, he's a good Christian. Well, I mean, he's being a Christian. He was being a good Christian. And, like, what happens if you don't believe in this shit? Again, I was putting on a performance for these Christians, and they couldn't see it. It's like, yeah, I'm showing up to church. I'm dressing up all nice. Hey, let me spit out some Bible verses. Oh, wow, he's being a good Christian. Like, I could put on that performance. And meanwhile, I got some chick locked up in the basement. I'm being a good Christian. Look, I think the biggest thing is the freedom, the peace, and the living my life on my own terms. I remember hearing this poet talk about, he was talking about this kid who committed suicide. This kid who committed suicide, this gay kid who committed suicide, and he used the illustration of him hanging adjacent to a Bible. This kid couldn't be himself. The Bible didn't allow him to be himself. Christianity has never been the religion of self-acceptance, self-confidence, at least not for me. It never had that example. And it was never an example for that. Like, there's a verse about how Jesus says, love yourself like you love thy neighbor like you love yourself. But what happens if you don't love yourself? There was never anything like that. But anyways, I'm grateful it worked out for, what's her name again? The Zambia lawyer, Naomi Palula. I see it worked out for them, but it didn't work out for me. Anyways, that's it for, that's it for the thought there. So FYAYCAJ, fuck you and your cracker ass Jesus. I ain't trying to hear it. I'm thinking of this, I'm done. No, I was thinking of the woman who was on a plane trying to talk up, preach Jesus, and people were just quiet about it. Oh, she got kicked out of the plane. She deserved it. But yeah, I would have told her the same. Fuck you and your cracker ass Jesus. Oh, wait, oh, Jesus ain't no cracker. Okay, white boy. But whatever. This concludes today's episode of Shut Up Podcast. Website is shutuppodcast.com. Email address is shutuppodcast401@gmail.com. Again, holla if you hear me. If I said anything on this episode that resonated, holla if you hear me. Before I end this show, I want to remind you that this podcast is a safe space for my thoughts, and they're protected by the red, the black, and the green, with the red, black, and the red, blue.
Rouge et bleu. Rouge et bleu.
I represent and hold it down for black folks who grew up watching TV Ontario and Télé-Québec, hence the bilingual. Sometimes I speak in English, des fois je parle français. I represent and hold it down for black folks who said yes when they heard Big Rube ask,
are you an outcast?
Thank you for listening. Remember, please be kind to your favorite podcast. All right, peace.
I'm black, y'all, and I'm black, y'all, and I'm black.
I am your king now.